I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Sheridan Johnson. She's co-creator of the play Dying to Text Gary, along with Ashira Montano. And I'd like to welcome Quinn Mander, who is an actor in the play. They're both part of the Threshold Art Collective. The play opens this coming Friday, the 3rd of April, at the Mineshaft Tavern at the Engine House Theater there in Madrid. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
So this play is very, very interesting, both in its content and really in the way it was put together. The actual title of it has a hashtag in front of it, Dying to Text Gary.
Yep.
And as you read it, and of course it's different when you see it on stage because each of the texts is played by real people, by characters, presumably, but it was really assembled by, what was it? You put stuff out on social media like OkCupid and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Ashira Montano came up with the concept and we talked about ways to get it off its feet. And we wanted to field responses from all around the country. So in addition to writing pieces ourselves as members of Threshold Art Collective, we took to Facebook, our own website, Twitter, and also absolutely OkCupid. Some of my favorite pieces in Dying to Text Gary are actually just verbatim responses that I've gotten from my personal OkCupid account. I put a bunch of writing prompts at the end of it. At the end of your profile, there's a section called You Should Message Me If, and I said, you should message me if you want to write about this stuff. And then
and
a bunch of people
did. Experiment, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and it's funny because, I mean, only reading the play can you really see how bad the spelling is,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
the grammar.
And you can probably hear the bad grammar on stage, yeah. But I mean, the kind of sweep of human characters and
yeah.
drama that you get back from complete strangers,
yes,
is just overwhelming.
Well, and that's the thing that's so fascinating is that I think people feel really protected by the notion of anonymity.
Yep.
And so there are things that, I mean, people have told us that...
Yeah, from the deeply touching to the deeply offensive, you know?
Yes.
Right. And short and long responses. It's fascinating. Yeah.
When you were doing this, I mean, if I may ask, were you actually simultaneously trying to get involved in relationships, or was this entirely a theater thing, or what?
Well, I guess the first time I joined OkCupid, my intention was actually to use it for its intended purpose and see if I could, you know, find love in all those internet places. But then, you know, it didn't really work out for me, so I figured, well, why not make the best of a bad situation and just use it for theater?
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that is so striking about this, which is striking about our lives today in general, and I think, I mean, every generation says about the next generation, these kids today, you
yeah.
know, you can find it on, you know, stone tablets yes. from 5,000 years ago. You can find it in St. Augustine. But there are sometimes actually real differences between generations. And one of the things that is so striking is people having relationships virtually.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the drama of that and the pain of that mm-hmm. when you don't even know what the other person smells like
yeah.
is very strange.
Yeah,
or
right.
how they're reacting. I yep. mean, I think it's really difficult, especially, I mean, so many of the people that I communicate with on a daily basis are incredibly sarcastic,
mm-hmm.
and it's, I can't imagine what it would be like to try to begin a relationship with any of us through text.
Right.
Because the sarcasm might not come across as sarcasm.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we
yeah.
think we're being hilarious.
Right.
And, you know, they think that we've just issued
right.
a death blow.
Right, 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 right. And the other thing, too, is that such a huge part of human communication is nonverbal, and you're removing all of those cues.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just the tone, it's body language, it's all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so the quality of interaction has changed, and part of this is an investigation of how the changing, you know, quality of interaction between people affects different relationships, and also the ease of connection, you know, how easy it is to connect with someone, or, you know, when you actually want to cut off contact. Let's say if a relationship's over and it's unhealthy for you to continue contacting this person, it's
try
so much
not
easier.
To look them up on Facebook.
Yeah, it's or swipe and click and text, you know, and like it's
yeah.
yeah.
Well, and one of the things that I think is really striking and that is very much dramatized in this play is that the spontaneity of media like text and Facebook and Instagram and all these other things make it really easy for you to say things that you'll regret. Whereas 20, 30 years ago, you're thinking these things,
right?
But you didn't actually say them because you would have had to pick up the phone or write a letter, both
exactly.
of which are, you know, there's enough time
to actually think about what you're doing. Right. And also now there's such a greater degree of permanence, too. So you say something like that you'll regret, and it's a part of public record now. You know,
yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. I mean, the little note you wrote in high school on notebook paper, that's gone.
Right.
And even if it isn't gone, it's in somebody's box in the attic.
Right. Right. Someone would have to go to a lot of effort to dig that up, yeah.
So let's talk about, we're talking about the play Dying to Text Gary. Now, how much of it is a story with a through line? How much of it is a series of vignettes?
Well, I think that it is. I mean, it is largely vignettes and monologues with a couple choral pieces, so to speak. But I do think the through line is really...
It's thematic, yeah.
It's, well, yeah, but and I think the theme is sort of the beginning to the middle to the end of a relationship to moving forward.
Right.
And exactly where you find the inspiration and the strength to take all those steps. And I do. I think that... The play, like the experience of living through that, is equal parts hilarious and awkward and hurtful and or rather painful.
And heartfelt,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Deeply heartfelt. And the other piece of that, too, is the relationship dynamics that happen when you have so many possible relationships or connections possible with people. So what are those relationships really like? What are the quality of them? Can you deeply connect with another human being when, you know, are you going to devote your time to that, to one person, you know, all that stuff? And which relationships do you choose? And when do you decide not to, you know...
And how do you get distracted?
And how do you get distracted? Yeah.
And so much of these kinds of connections are done... through companies whose entire purpose is to monetize your interactions.
Exactly.
And so in some ways that really, I think, reinforces the idea that dating is a marketplace.
Exactly. Yes.
Actually, the creators of Tinder have tried to publicize it when they first came out with it, with the tagline, so to speak, that they're making romance a game. And I've actually not used Tinder. But I have watched tutorials on how one does. And as you're swiping left or right, it says keep playing. So even by using that vocabulary, they're trying to make it make it available to us in the same way that a game is, which actually, through their research, they've discovered that that actually makes people of our generation feel more optimistic about their romantic futures.
Huh.
Does it really?
I think that it's almost the same way that eating McDonald's gives you more energy. Absolutely, for half an hour, and then you sort of feel empty.
And it's incredibly trivial in some ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
you don't get the nutrition you need. And I think nutrition is such a metaphor for so many other things, like a nutritious friendship. But actually, somebody in the play was talking about sex, and it's like, this was not McDonald's sex. This was like three-course
meal sex. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Right, exactly. Well, and the other thing, too, is like, you know, I mean, internet dating and the various ways in which we connect and pursue romance in those ways it's changed the nature of that, and we're still figuring out if it's for good or for ill.
Well, and I think it's both, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that if you have an interest that the people in your community don't share with you,
or if you
feel motivated to go find something that you think you're missing, the internet absolutely helps you do that.
Right, and find like-minded people really easily. Yeah.
The other side of the coin, though, is that, I mean, I think we've all experienced the notion that as you get more of something, the importance of each thing diminishes.
Yeah, it kind of trivializes it in a way.
Yeah, that's right.
Ashira Montaño wrote a piece, actually, as sort of one of the Quark Ensemble pieces that's really about the algorithm. You know, it's about the idea that not only is our relationships viewed as a commodity, but it's also a problem to solve. It's now, you know, expressed in terms of mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we can determine your preferences like Pandora in music, we can determine your preferences with relationships using mathematical formulas that are very sophisticated. You know, and that's another kind of, it's a strange thing for me to think about.
And especially since when you finally end up with somebody that you actually like, I mean, I don't have numbers on this, but just anecdotally, it just seems like it's random. It's a person you met in a cafe one day, or it was a friend of a friend, and you weren't making lists of the qualities that you hope for in the other person. Something magical or spontaneous happens.
Something to be discovered, you know? And that's the thing, is that that's why I find it so disturbing that you can turn it into a formula.
That you can Google a husband.
There's right. And that there's a variable for all this stuff. Like, where's the, you know, where's the piece where you find out something spontaneous about someone? You know, there's a connection.
That being said, though, I mean, all of our research indicates that throughout the U.S. and the U.K., roughly a third of all marriages start online now.
Yep.
And I think that's also really interesting. Sorry, two of my favorite statistics from the research we've done to create this play. Well, 30% of relationships and marriages that end in marriages are beginning online. Only 30% of adults now are actually married versus 70% 30 years ago. So things are
changing. Those other 70% meanwhile are swiping their Tinder app and wondering what's going to happen next. And the amount of energy, and I think this play dramatizes it so beautifully, the amount of energy that you spend, that those same people 30 years ago, their counterparts 30 years ago, when they were bummed out about a relationship, I mean, that doesn't change. Unhappiness over, you know, 20-something romance is a probably a constant all over the world. But, you know, what you do about it, I mean, I remember taking long walks and trying to be alone and, like, hoping that somewhere I would get to a flowering tree and I could stop and smell it because that at least gave me some solace. And now I'm sure, as much as the next person, I'd be going to Facebook and just, like, reading the news feed for 7 hours.
Yeah.
And that's not good for you.
No.
Well, and also going to Facebook and obsessively checking pictures of what you know, the person that you've left is now up to. And what's also strange is that we can brand ourselves. I mean, my heart might be breaking, but according to Facebook, I am having a super awesome time.
Right.
And so
love is a brand, you know, or your personality is a brand, you know, in some ways.
And then the person whose heart is also breaking looks at you and says, how come I'm the only one whose heart is breaking?
Yeah.
So the play is called Dying to Text Gary, or maybe we should call it hashtag Dying to Text Gary. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how this is represented, because of course on stage, because of course a lot of this stuff is really solitary when you're texting or doing Facebook. How are you staging it?
Well, we do have people sort of engaging with each other as well as with the audience, delivering particularly the more monologue-driven pieces.
Right.
That being said, because it is a four-person cast, even if there's one person speaking, there is a lot of interaction. Just amongst ourselves, again, with the audience, and also with individual pieces of technology. In addition to the actors on stage, we also have a screen for projections. We do have a lot of responses from OkCupid users whose pictures we can't use. So, you know, there might be some interesting graphics there as replacements. And also, of course, there are a couple acronyms that we were talking earlier to the average user or average person. Right. I mean, I had to Google some of them.
Yes.
And
yeah, what's a BBW?
BBW is Big Beautiful Woman.
Which means heavy.
I guess, yes. Well, it just means that if you're on, you know, Tinder, OkCupid, any of those sites, and you say BBW friendly, you just say, you know, it's a body positive term.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And there's so many of those, so you're going to have a glossary.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, are you both in it?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so you are not only co-creator of the play, Sheridan, but you're also acting
in it. And Sheridan Montano, whose concept the play originally was, is also in the play as well, along with Katie Lord, who is a fantastic current Madrid local from New York herself. So we've got a pretty great crew.
Yeah.
So three gals and a guy.
Yes.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about some of the parts that you each play. Like, tell us a little bit about some of the characters. Like, did you ever, I mean, in some sense, they're people that you don't know, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
So do you, like, make up their backstories? I mean,
I do a little bit on that kind of stuff, but some of it, the points of view, I mean, acting to me is very much about specific point of view. And those are so clear. Some of these pieces are so sort of succinct in that way. The points of view are so clear. And the snapshot of this interaction with technology and with other people is so clear that it's, you know, for me in one of the pieces, you know, it's about the trouble of trying to figure out you know, whether or not you're actually even on a date, you know,
yes.
I even go out with someone, and all of that are stuff that we can all, that are easily relatable. So that's a piece that I relate to as a person, and that's the core question. So for me, that really comes from me, you know, the way in which I personalize that.
There are also a couple pieces that we did write and a couple pieces that, you know, we've developed relationships with artists all across the country. This is actually Ashira and my second project of a sort of similar nature. And so a lot of the people that that did submit, I would say it's equal parts strangers and friends. And so that's also really interesting, too, is to be reading something that someone you intimately know has written. And there are details that you might maybe weren't aware of before soliciting the piece, I suppose, and exploring it. But I think that that even makes it more personal and a more intimate experience for both the performer and the audience. I think it's impressive how universal a lot of the experiences are. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if each of you would be willing to share what you got out of this personally, if anything, because it's such intimate material in a way.
Yeah.
I think, awkwardly enough, I got a lot of hope out of it. Mm-hmm. I think it's really in a community that feels oftentimes disassociated, the universality of some of the themes and some of the experiences and the emotions has actually made me feel way more connected to my own experiences because I don't feel like they're so horrible or, you know, shameful. And also to other people. I think it's neat to know that we're sort of all in this together, whether we know it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel similarly about this. I mean, one of the things that's really cool is discovering how universal all these experiences are and have been. I mean, you mentioned the differences between past generations and current generations, but there's a lot of ways in which the questions we're wrestling with are exactly the same. We just wrestle with them differently. We have different tools to try to grapple with them.
Yeah, I mean, Elizabeth Barrett in Pride and Prejudice would have been texting.
Right, exactly. And
Mr. Darcy.
Right, exactly. Right.
Probably not on Twitter.
But possibly not.
Right.
Probably not. That's a 140 character limit is right.
Yeah.
But Oscar Wilde, however, would have been an amazing Twitter person.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. And then the other thing, too, is that, I was struggling with writing a piece myself, which didn't end up in the show. I sort of made the decision it wasn't ready yet. And but it was... I was trying to crystallize what I felt about stuff, and I didn't really realize how sort of disjointed a lot of my ideas were and how I hadn't challenged a lot of my assumptions. And reading the other pieces of points of view that were so starkly different from the way I've traditionally felt about this stuff was really critical, I think, for both deciding, well, maybe I haven't really considered that well, or no, I really don't agree with that, and here's why, you know, against the same, like, even when I don't, you know, feel the same way about a subject, just knowing that somebody else is deeply grappling with that does create this incredible sense of community in a way. And it gives me a lot of hope, too, that, you know, we're still trying to connect. And we're still trying to figure out what that means and how to do that deeply and meaningfully.
Right, which really goes against the stereotypes that people have about the generation that's using these media.
Right.
You know, there's this, I mean, I can't count how many times I've heard adults in their 60s and older dismissively talk about how the younger generation is just about hooking up. Right. And they say those words very sort of like...
Disdainfully.
Well, disdainfully, and also like they're not used to saying those words. So it's
right.
Sort of
it's an alien
stiff.
Concept.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, I guess that's happening. But as you say, underneath it is the universal hope for true connection with another person.
Right. I mean, and there's ways, I think, in which technology can sabotage that in the ways that we do and impede that. But there's also ways in which, you know, like Sheridan pointed out, that it actually can make it easier, you know?
You know, there's another dimension to what technology does, and I think it's that, I mean, let's say you are living in the 70s and you keep a diary.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That diary is there forever. Let's say you're living in the 2000s and you have a Facebook account. Once you delete that, all those chapters of your life or the documentation of those chapters of your life is completely gone. And so the ephemerality of these media is really striking unless you are doing what you guys do and making art out of it.
It's sort of gone until you log back in. And it's all saved. Facebook has it.
Right, but then I mean, there are people who just say, screw this all and delete their accounts.
Yeah.
And then it's gone. And I know somebody who had a Tumblr account. Thousands and thousands of posts.
Yeah.
One day they're just all gone.
Yeah, right.
No, actually, a very, very close personal friend of mine passed away last year. And I am not a person who takes pictures very often. And I went on Facebook because one of the only archives where I had some photographs of our favorite memories together were on Facebook. And I was really startled that that they were no longer there. A friend of mine had gone for a fairly high up government position and had removed most of her photos. And, you know, those memories are gone forever.
So the play is called Dying to Text Gary. It's co-created by Sheridan Johnson and Ashira Montano. Quinn Mander is an actor in the play. There's four actors total. And it opens this Friday, April 3rd, and it's Friday and Saturdays this weekend and next weekend at the Engine House Theater in the Mineshaft Tavern in Madrid. Now, how did you choose Madrid as the place to do this?
I love Madrid. I love it so much. Actually, I mean, one thing I would like to say for anybody who's sort of thinking about, oh, it is a two-lane highway, kind of a trek. Madrid is so great. Go
it
spend
is.
The day. If you can, go visit. They have amazing local galleries, phenomenal artists, live there, work there all the time. There's also some fantastic restaurants. I highly recommend checking out the Holler, which is directly across the street from the theater. They have amazing shrimp and grits, and their bruschetta is really good. There's also the Mineshaft Tavern, which is where the theater is held, and that's just wonderful comfort food, full liquor license, which might be useful for some people for enjoying our play, just because it is personal.
Yeah.
Or did you just tell people to self-medicate before watching?
I would never. No. But it's such a great town. It's full of wonderful, wonderful people and so many neat things to do and to see and to eat and to try. So that was a big part of it. It's honestly, it's like one of my favorite places in the world.
It's great. It's beautiful.
So we're really grateful that they're having us there. It's really generous and kind of them.
And they've been great partners. Yeah.
And for those who live outside of Madrid in Santa Fe or Taos or anywhere else, it's definitely worth the drive. And it's such a nice drive, especially when there's no snow and ice.
Yes. Yeah.
Going and the weather is starting to change. I mean, it's really, it's beautiful.
Yep.
We drive there every day for rehearsal. And I mean, like, I keep, like, trying to take, like, pulling off to the side of the road to take pictures because, you know, it's just so beautiful.
It is gorgeous, yeah.
Are you posting the pictures?
I am, yes. You can follow us on Facebook for all that photo fun.
Now, if people want to buy tickets, where do they do so?
People can buy tickets at our website, www.thresholdnm.com, or they can go to dyingtotextgary.brownpapertickets.com. Either way, you'll end up the same place. Tickets are $15. However, we would like to extend a special offer to the listeners of your program just because we're so grateful for everything you do for us, and we do love the community that you help substantiate. And so for all listeners for the program, we'd like to offer $10 tickets. And if you enter the discount code KSFR in all caps, you can achieve that discount under the header qualified discount.
Sheridan Johnson and Quinn Mander, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.